Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. I am, just for a change, sitting in quite a dark tent with a dark space outside with just the laptop and my good friend Sean Maguire. Hiya, Sean.
Hey, how are you doing, Doc? How are you MSI people?
We've had a very exciting day of it here, picking Sean up from Glastonbury and all the rest of it. We're still settling down a bit, so I'm going to play another 4 or 5 minute, couple more tunes, and then we'll be back with you with Sean and with a couple of guests, with Sean Kirwan, and we're going to have a bit of a talk about geomancy and what it means. Sean has been on the show for a couple of 10 minute slots in the past, but we thought, being as he's out of the closest thing we've got to a leader, we thought we'd have him on and give him a bit more time. A little bit later on, we'll be talking with John Witterick, who's also been on the show, but he was talking about the Bilderberg session that he went to and some work he's been doing with Mark Windows. Tonight, I want to talk a little bit about his Get Out of Debt Free website, because it certainly seems to be helping an enormous number of people. But before we get into that, here's You Beat the Hell Out of Me by The Motors. So here we are once again. We're at what I reckon is going to be about probably our last festival outing of the year, although it sounds like there might be a bit more action. We're at a thing called the Unity Earth Dance just outside Glastonbury. It's going to be a bit of a small gig, I think, probably maybe 300 or 400 people. And it's one of these things we've been talking about for some time, where the idea is that everybody comes along, puts their pack partly into being a crew. And that, you know, if you see something that needs doing, then the reason you've seen it is because you're the man to do it. Or if not, draw somebody else's attention to it. We've had a fantastic day of it. I went to get Sean from Glastonbury today. It's a pretty strange place, Glastonbury. And thanks very much for joining me, Sean. It's a real pleasure to have you here, mate.
You are more than welcome. I'm so honoured to be here. This place is fantastic. Thank you so much for inviting me over, Doc.
Well, the idea is that, as well as doing a couple of presentations this time, we've come a bit earlier to help set it up, but also we're going to be helping to host the Avalon Rise in space. And I was looking forward to having you kind of doing some poetry for people in between times, but you were at it from the moment you came through the gate, weren't you?
It was great. And we actually made friends with Kirsty and Di and Victoria down at the main gate. I mean, yeah. Talk about bouncers. Hey, guys, the three most beautiful bouncers you'll ever meet at a festival anywhere. But anyway, that's an aside. Yeah. It was brilliant. And when people come in, I was asked, would I stay down there? But you sorted me out first with a fantastic tent and a place to kick, yeah, lay my head. Because I've had a hectic couple of days, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a bit from the sublime to the ridiculous. I mean, you're outside the Dole yesterday, hassling politicians, or trying to. It was a good show you did last night, but the signal was a bit up and down here. So
no, we had problems. We had problems with, yeah, with the signal, but I think we got through it, and hopefully it was a good show for you guys.
And no kip. Did you get any kip on the way over here? Because you're still looking very bright.
The energy here, the people here are fantastic. No, I actually stayed up all night, thanks to Sean Dennis for putting me up, and Anne cooking me a beautiful meal during the show that I did, and then staying up all night. And he drove me to the airport at like 5 in the morning and dropped me off at the terminal. And to be honest, I sat on the plane. And I don't know who I was sat next to, but I must have been snoring immediately. And all I remember is the landing in Bristol. So I must have slept the whole way.
Got a bit of a nap.
I got a cat nap.
What did you think of Glastonbury? Because it's your first time in the town. You've been to the festival, haven't you? But you've not been to the actual town.
No. And I have to say, it's an incredibly strange town. I mean, that's like a song for the Jam, isn't it? Strange Town?
Yeah.
It really was. I found myself in this really strange town. Beautiful. I have to say, like a Cotswold picturesque village. It really is. And I grew up in the Cotswolds. But the atmosphere was very strange. It was like incredibly light and hippie-ish and gorgeous and loving and caring and wow. But there was something really dark there too. So I reckon it's like the real yin and the yang, the up and down, yeah, the different edges of it, I think.
I think you're exactly right. And it shows how powerful that feeling is, in that you picked up on it straight away, and you're not the first one by any means. You don't have to live in Glastonbury to feel that. There is there's a real potential between the creative and the receptive.
And the destructive, possibly.
Yeah, that too. I mean, it's quite good to see a town where all the shops have still got people in them running shops.
True.
And a lot of them have been here for a long, long time, ever since I came to Glastonbury. So it's a kind of thriving place, but there's everything. You've got the Arthurian myth people here, you've got the goddess crew, you've got, and then you've got, you know, big issue sellers and people with dogs.
It was amazing. In between the normal shops, if you like, the bookshops, the retail outlets and all the rest of it, there were things like the cauldron, enter the cauldron.
Yeah.
Or the shamanic workshop, or it was very strange and quite incredible to see it.
You could easily spend a lot of gaming tokens if you had them in Glastonbury, and you'd come away with a lot of really beautiful and some useful things. But it is, in a way, for the sort of more New Agey inclined, it is the ultimate shopping experience. But if you're New Agey inclined, you ain't got any cash to spend on anything.
Yeah, I think it's for the upper middle class New Agey people that have just found it after, I don't know, selling the Ferrari.
Yeah. When we first started coming here, we had earnable tokens and stuff, and we had money to spend, and it's been going, just reducing itself over the years until nowadays we only get to... We only get to window shop now. There's some shops, in fact, there's a couple of bookshops, second-hand bookshops, and the number of times they've had books in the window that have been books I've been looking for maybe 4, 5, 6 years.
Well, that's fantastic.
At least 3 times I've wandered in there, had to spend 20-odd quid, you know, but they've said, no, we only put that in the window 5, 10 minutes ago.
And it was yours.
And it was there, put there for me, and that's, I think, part of the rest of the energy of Glastonbury, is it manifests loads of things for loads of people. It changes loads of lives.
Even in the reality of getting off a bus, you were busy still doing a few things, getting photocopying.
Yeah.
John Witterick, I think, and yourself were doing being busy getting
doing chores, crewing
festival type of stuff. Yeah. And I was waiting for you. I went into this little shop. Bread basket,
Burns the Bread.
Burns the Bread. What a great name for a shop, Burns the Bread. Well, I went in there, and honestly, I mean, I want one in Galway, if anyone is listening in Galway. Basically, I went in there, and you get a free coffee, and by the way, it's nice coffee, right? Lovely coffee. If you buy a savoury something or a cake.
Yeah.
And I just, that was veggie sausage rolls. It was like I had to have one because I don't get to eat sausage rolls because I'm a veggie.
Yeah.
And there they were in the shop. They're ready to eat.
And loads of other vegetarian options
one. So I actually bought 2 things, a cheese and onion pasty and a veggie sausage roll while I was waiting for your dog.
That's why I had to spend a bit of time hanging out outside the HSBC usury shop.
I do apologise that you had to experience that shock horror in the middle of Glastonbury.
Actually, I do feel me and John, we definitely drew the short straw there. I used to tend to leave festivals in the middle of them, partly to go and use a clean loo or maybe get some chips down the pub. And in those days, I was a meat eater, so sometimes I was after meat as well.
Okay.
But in recent years, I've learned once I get on site, I actually like to stay here.
But the food here is fantastic.
That was an amazing meal,
We have just had a meal where nearly 100 people are sat in a beautiful big tent, okay? And the meal gets brought to us. Plates dished out by a few, as you say, people on the job who want to do their thing. The knives and forks get sent out. And then a meal. Honestly, guys, I mean, you'd love the dinner. Whether you're a meat eater or not, it was... Oh, I had a veggie chilli.
Yeah,
My back of my throat's still burning. It was lovely.
Yeah, really tasty as well. It had a lot of herbs as well as spices in it. It wasn't too hot. I think we're going to be treated to some really great food. And that's one of the things I like about this particular gig, is one of the things they're aiming on doing is getting everybody together for a meal in the evening.
Fantastic.
Which is really great, because as regular listeners will know, we quite often don't get our guests because they've been sucked away to food's turned up or something like that. But here, everybody hopefully is going to go over there and eat. Makes for a great social occasion. And it brings us really to why this is happening. One of them, it's recognised amongst the people here that we are in a time of really amazing transition, amazing potential, and that by getting together and getting things done and setting our intent, we can help impress ourselves on these changeable times and hopefully make it a change for the better. And the people who are manifesting here are astonishing. Like I say, it took me 3/4 of an hour to, well, maybe an hour actually, to get your way past the gate.
Yeah, when we came into the place, just the light that shone at us, the people that were there, you were hugging everyone. And I'd only just, like, I didn't know anybody except you, Doc. So, but I ended up hugging everyone as well. It was fantastic. And since then, it's been nonstop, people picking poems out of my bag.
Oh, that's great. And they work just as well in the field as they do on the radio. But it's really lovely to be able to see people's faces as you read the poems to them.
I'm honoured they want to listen, I have to say. It's been great.
I think again, it's really great seeing you doing them as well, because we get all the body language and all of that. But I suddenly realised, I've really enjoyed hearing them on the radio, but I've suddenly realised what a tool for change they are.
Thank you.
The effect they have on people. It's like people are kind of drawn along on the words. You can see them. You can see them being englamoured, being fascinated. And because the poems are, you know, half a page, three quarters of a page long, the kind of messages got through before anybody would have a chance to resist. Not that you're going to find anybody here who's going to resist the sort of ideas in your poetry, but I still love the story, love that story you told the other week about the officials you met. Okay, who was it who asked for it's time for a revolution?
The Cork mayor, the County Cork mayor.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
And those ideas are in his head now.
I hope so. You know? I hope so. But look, you're flattering me. it is simple poetry. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm just amazed now that people like them. I really am.
That's the point, though. I mean, I think that there's because it can be so difficult to talk to people without them switching off, I can really see how knowing a poem like It's Time for a Revolution is going to be really useful amongst people who might not otherwise listen, because quite a lot of people who don't want to listen to the ideas we've got have been trained to have a kind of innate respect for poetry. And I think it leaves them in this kind of like this difficult space for just long enough for messages to get through, like they do in song. And I think it is a vehicle that is going to enable us, you know, if we start using your poems, you know, to...
And great lyrics from songs, absolutely.
Yeah, great definitely. Lyrics from songs definitely. Too. Yeah, and that's, of course, one of the things we're hoping to be doing here. Whilst we've been to lots of festivals and lots of things have been going on, as far as I know, nobody's ever tried to do a kind of shared word-of-mouth space.
Yeah.
Where the idea is that we encourage people to come in and for people to tell a story or give us a poem or a joke, whatever they feel like. And we're going to be doing that for a couple of evenings, just for a couple of hours.
Well, I tell you what, I bumped into a guy, well, I talk about bumping into, they had to come past me, you know, because I ended up working at the gate, because I'm crew.
Yeah.
Do you know, when I can't lift luggage and take people's tents and help them lugging it up the hill and all the rest of it. So there I was with beautiful girls, inviting people in, and Jack, great big fella Jack, he was the car park manager, doing all his stuff. And there was a guy called Antoine. That turned out. We can hardly understand each other. I'm speaking with a sort of a strange Irish English broken accent, and he's there in and totally just off the boat from France. Okay, and he did a poem. I performed a poem for him. He picked one out of the bag because other people were at the time. Then he performed a poem. Okay, in French, and do you know what? I understood it, and I don't speak French. It was, and it was political. It was honestly, there was certain nuances in there that I just got the meaning from his language.
Oh, really great. Poet meets poet.
It was amazing.
And actually, the ladies in the meet and greet and hand out the tickets and deal with all the rules, they must have really liked you, because they left you in there on your own. Next time I came down, there was only you running the show.
That's true. Well, they had to go and eat, and they just showed me what to do. And to be honest, there were some things I couldn't deal with. I mean, there was a child with a nut allergy. Who do I tell? I didn't know the chefs, whatever. Yeah. So I did have a few messages to give them when they got back.
Yeah.
But it was great, and the people were lovely, and it wasn't a case of you know, doing what they were told. They would say, like, can I not put my tent there by my car? No, and then it would be explained why.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh right, yeah, true. Can't have 300 people in the car park with the tents next to their cars. Right, that's true. Let's get into the festival.
Yeah.
So it was just the way it was done, and the people, the way they accepted it as well.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
And I think it's a demonstration of what we mean when we say if you turn up and you're expected to be crew, then that includes being left in charge of the ticket office with a load of paperwork and not a lot of guidance.
And if they only realised the days I had before and the travelling and outside the Royal Oroctus and all the rest of it.
Well, I think it's going to be cracking. I reckon there'll be plenty of people for us to interview and record and I should think we'll get a bit of stuff together whilst it's all going on.
Well, the people you have coming on later, I actually picked Blackberries with Sean earlier, and he is amazing.
No, okay, we're going to have to go and find Sean.
Ah, because the conversation I had with him when I was just picking Blackberries with him blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you're in for a treat, guys. It's brilliant stuff.
Yeah, well, I might have to put a tune on whilst I go and find him, because he might actually be in the
But I've got to mention John Witterick as well.
Oh, John,
I mean, I've just made a friend. I mean, what can I say? We've just clicked in a way that not many people can click, I think. So immediately, I love him to bits already, guys, okay? John Witterick is a star.
Yeah, and he's also now on the kind of hosting list for Avalon Rising, so he's also become part of our regular crew and is dragging the tents around and
amazing, and he's a great speaker.
Yeah.
Do you know, he really, really knows how to put it across.
Well, he's going to be talking about spiritual economics here, and it is a talk I've heard him do before. It's well worth listening to, it is. I see Haggis Magus is saying, here we are consoling your missus, Sean, while you're flirting with English women.
Oh, no!
Vicky's not English, she's from Birmingham.
She's not English, she's from Birmingham. And the accents are fantastic. And by the way, she was all over her fella when he turned up, so I have absolutely no chance, guys. All right, Haggis?
No, I think it's meeting... There's going to be... You get some idea of the kind of intensity of activity there's going to be over the weekend as it builds up, because this is very definitely a warm-up. We've got probably 100 or so people here. I would think about half of them are probably crew.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I'm really looking forward to hosting an arena with you and seeing what we turn out. And the word of mouth should be fun as well.
And is that going to happen in this... Like, we're in a dome tent at the moment. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's lovely. But I've seen some tents around the place, and they are amazing. Like, the place we had the meal.
Well, that's Earth Heart. They're a kind of a background sound to Dr. Rock, really, because from our early shows out of the Ordinary and the Green Gathering... Earth Heart were very much part of organising sections of that, and quite often we had our talk tent more or less next to the Earth Heart club tent. So in some of the early Dr. Rock podcasts, you could hear this huge music engine just building up in the background.
Because they promised us, didn't they, that it's going to be tomorrow night especially, Saturday night.
Yeah, we're going to have a big dance out.
It's going to be outrageous. Yeah. So our tents aren't far away from that. So
no,
we're actually
camped between the two noisy tents for that night. So, but yeah, that'll be really good. We're sitting in this really beautiful geodesic dome. So we're sitting in a geometric structure. In the middle of it, we've got another device. We've got a device called a soliton, which is basically a very ingenious spiral woven pattern, which has got crystals at each of the interstices. So everywhere where the willow meets, there's a little quartz crystal. And hung down over the top of the whole thing is a single quartz crystal, which is collecting energy and spreading it through the whole thing. And it you can actually pull it up to the ceiling, you know, have you noticed that? And then you can get inside it and you can have it spinning around you.
It is totally amazing, and I'm flabbergasted. I thought it was a massive, I tell you what, it looks like a massive lampshade, right? Without the cover, if you like, which is the but the way the crystals are on it, what happens? You lift it up to the ceiling and stand inside it. It's definitely, you could get a 7-foot tall guy in there, definitely.
And then it'll kind of spin. And that was built by Noel Squibb, who other people who've been listening to the show will also remember it, because he's been on talking about an 86-meter healing pipe that he put on some wasteland.
Okay.
And he's using it to clear
87
water.
Meters.
It's really big, yeah. He said he didn't know whether he should put it in, but it's in a place where nobody notices it.
Okay.
And he's finding lots and lots of healing energies coming off it. And he's even having useful and productive talks with the Environment Agency, who instead of making trouble for him on his land, are actually really enjoying going and visiting him.
Wow.
And this is the kind of stuff that he's doing.
Well, it's amazing, because it looks like a piece of art, and it's also a healer at the same time, so...
Yeah.
That's the way to go. If you're going to make a piece of art, let it heal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, indeed. Well, it seems that a lot of Noel's stuff does that kind of accidentally. He'll be doing a talk tomorrow as well, I think. We've got, from Haggis Magus, is that a bender, Doctor, the geodesic dome? Well, it's not really, because I think, technically speaking, you use kind of bended hazel and ash and things for making a bender. This is made up of rigid poles of two different lengths and plastic rings into which the poles fit. And what it makes is a bit like an icosahedron. So I'm going to just put on another couple of tunes whilst I go and see if I can find Sean. And if not, other Sean and I will have to entertain you.
We'll just have to go on. But yeah. The guy who has, I think, designed and made called again?
The Crystal Soliton.
Yeah. Well, you have entered the building with your dog.
Yeah. Welcome, Noel. I'm just going to put a couple of tunes on, folks. I'll see if I can round Sean up.
As,
if you know where he is, that'd be great. Thanks, Noel.
I do.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Listen, I spilt the fucking water. It didn't go on you. It didn't go any further than that.
Oh, that's all right. But that's all right. I think.
Do you want to move that way a bit?
No, it's all right. It's sitting on a dry thing. It'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I apologize.
Yeah. So is this your first time at a festival?
Any festival?
Yeah.
No.
Where have you been before?
Should we perform at Failing a Vulture and Failing a Pobble and.
Failing a Pobble?
Yeah.
That sounds like that's the Welsh word for people.
It is. Failing of the people, yeah. Failing a Vulture is the failure of those welcomes. Some of the things that happened to me were amazing.
Just speak up a bit. Yeah, well, my dad.
I didn't realize I thought you'd put a tune on.
No, I didn't know. I thought we'd just carry on.
Absolutely. We're just
having gone to get Sean, like.
Well,
yeah.
Fair enough. So I didn't realize we were alive.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was absolutely amazing. I was thinking to myself, hang on a second. They haven't put me on. This was a fail in a Vulture, I think. They haven't put me on. What's going on? And there was a rave going on. And I thought, well, there's absolutely no way they're going to put a poet on now. So I'm at the back of the massive marquee. Everyone's dancing and buzzing and jumping up and down. The DJ's brilliant, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, there's no way now. It's St. Patrick's Day it was, right? There's about an hour left of it. There's no way they're going to bring on a poet. So I have a few beers at the back and someone hands me a whiskey and the whole lot, right? So I'm enjoying myself. And then suddenly the DJ goes, whoa. And now Sean Maguire the poet, and I'm like, what? For the last hour of St. Patrick's Day. So I didn't know what to do, and I was half cut by then, because it doesn't take long to get Sean Maguire pissed. So I pick up a tricolour at the back of which just happened to be stood beside me at the back of the marquee, and I walk through the crowd waving the Irish flag, right? Got to the stage, walked up, it was only a pallet and stuff, so I walked up about a couple of steps onto the stage. I got the flag, and I sort of leant on it, and there was a hole just there perfectly, and it stood upright, the flag beside me. Two guys came the other side and went, all right, Sean. And I carried on with this gig. And I did like an hour. The first thing I said was, in honour of St. Patrick, that apparently and allegedly got rid of the snakes in Ireland, we should finish the job. There's some real nasty feckers doing some horrible things in our country. Let's get them gone, shall we? And then I did all the poetry. And you know, it's out of the bag from then on.
Yeah, oh, that's brilliant, because they knew who to put on the headline of the bill, didn't they?
That was mad!
Yeah, they were all warming up for you.
And the funny thing is, I did a gig the following day, and it was a Sunday, and everybody was like, a night of partying after I did my hour, right?
Yeah.
And everything that came out of the bag the first night was political, and yeah, let's do this! And then the following day, I did an afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, in a chill-out tent, and every poem that came out was lovely.
It
was about the garden.
It's like the bag's got some kind of mind of its own.
It really knows what it's doing. It's synchronistic.
It's a dowsing bag.
You've got Sean.
Yeah, yeah. We've got Sean. We've got the best leader we never had. We've got Sean Kirwan. Thanks for joining us, Sean. You're happy with it?
It's come together, isn't it?
It has.
In the last, in the last hour or so.
Yeah, but we're ready for it tomorrow.
Yes, we are.
So how did your workshop go earlier then, Sean?
Oh, yeah, it was very interesting, and I forgot I had it. and so did everyone else, so no one came, and I didn't worry about it because I wasn't ready either.
So, yeah, that's...
I have to say, I met you earlier, Sean, and I had one of the most interesting conversations whilst picking blackberries with you.
They were in the shrubbery for a good 25 minutes.
We were engrossed.
I was learning. I'm learning since I've been here.
Well, what were you telling him then, Sean?
Well, we were talking about consciousness and dryads and, you know, normal sort of things, really.
Yeah. Well, they're normal to you, Sean.
Hang on, there were elementals and dryads, as you said? And
yes.
It was all news to me, mate.
Because you actually, you do little workshops on speaking with nature spirits, don't you?
That's right, yeah.
How do you approach that?
Ah, yes. Well, yeah, they kind of approach you. I had an experience when I was in Findhorn of meeting these beings called gnomes. And they're etheric beings, but they're uniquely linked to nature. In fact, they're gardeners of nature. They work in conjunction with, they're kind of like the ultimate recyclers. Imagine Womblers, only invisible. Wombles.
Yeah.
Imagine invisible Wombles with not long noses and kind of look like us, maybe a bit stubbier. And they basically compost and recycle all the etheric junk in the landscape. And they do that for the plants, the trees, the soil. And so the whole thing is kind of like nitrogen cycle. So if you imagine the thing which makes everything decay back, brings back the nitrates, the fertilizing properties of the earth, they decompost everything, recycle everything, and tend the earth, basically.
Yeah.
And that's why they're associated with mushrooms and things like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, these beings, they're very friendly. They are etheric. They're invisible. Few people have got pictures of them. Few people have seen them. But most of the communication I have is through dowsing.
Yeah.
So I actually use my dowsing rods to communicate with them. And that's probably the easiest and safest way to go about it initially, until you start to have a rapport, like with any spirit or angel or whatever, if you do that kind of thing. But anyway, they're very real. They're very dowsable. So I can show anyone how to douse them. And I also get people to feel the energy field and feel their consciousness, because it's quite unique. It's very different to ours.
And when I did that workshop with you, you started by getting people to work with human energy fields.
That's right. That's one way to do it. But I think people, my experience now is that most people can feel energy at some level or another. Even if it's, and particularly girls are very good at this, because they know when you're looking at them. They'll turn around just as you're looking at their bum, and they know that you're looking at them. So they've got a sixth sense, and that's kind of dowsing in a way. That is what dowsing is being sensing someone's sensing energy, or in that case, sensing an intent.
Yeah.
So, and if someone comes up behind you, you know they're there, even if you don't hear them.
Yeah.
Okay, you know they're there, you can feel their energy. I think most people are at that stage now.
I think Rupert Sheldrake's actually demonstrated that this is the case.
That was his research, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The
sense of being stared at.
That's right, yeah. And so it's all there. Most people can feel it. And most people, I notice, because I do a lot of healing for people's houses when they've got blocked energy and they have problems sleeping and disturbances and illness. I work with people to basically harmonize their homes. And that can be all kinds of different things, earth energies. But when I go into people's houses, I notice that often they've done their own feng shui. Like they've put the wind chime in a particular place, they put a Buddha in a crystal, whatever it is, potted plant, succulent. And people are actually intuitively doing their own feng shui.
So you quite often find people have inadvertently almost done things that are energetically beneficial to their situation.
Yeah, often.
Would that be instinctually?
Instinctive, yeah. And I think it is quite instinctive to kind of find ley lines. And you see that very much in animals, like particularly sheep. Yeah. There's a common one to watch sheep walk across the field. They always walk. Well, not always, but if they're walking in a straight line, you guarantee that is a ley line they're walking on.
And they do that actually in Wales. Yeah. We've seen a whole flock of sheep moving in a straight line across a landscape.
Yeah, and there'll be a little path. And not only will the sheep use that line, but also foxes will. And deer.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think they're getting from using the line?
Well, the line is actually charged etheric chi. So it's like prana. It's like orgon. It's like
subtle energy.
Chi energy, and it's charged by the sun, and it streams across the landscape in these straight lines. And people, animals, use it all the time. Bees use it. All kinds of animals use it, and plants particularly. You can sometimes see variations in shrubbery and foliage where there's a line. And a classic one is the huge oak tree in the middle of the field. Right, you know that is on a ley line. It's found a ley line.
Yeah.
And it's just gone huge because of the increased energy.
Do humans use it, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Earth energy.
You know, can we be aware of using it, or is it just that that's going to feel good?
Well, you know, the ancients did. The ancients knew. The ancients knew how to harness it. That's what all the temples and stone circles and monuments.
But do we do it instinctively without knowing?
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's so. To a certain extent, if we're putting plants and things in places.
Yeah, because we gravitate towards that type of energy. We are surface dwelling beings. We like the sun. We live off, you know, we're solar beings basically. We don't live underground. We're not nocturnal. So
we're living on the roof.
So we gravitate to a similar type of solar charge energy. Now, the Earth energy is then, it's not the same as our energy, but what happens with the Earth energy, it comes in through our base chakra. So when you're on a ley line in general, it will resonate with the base chakra. So you'll feel all your energy pooling in your base chakra. Yeah, and it's also, you can also douse people's auric fields before going into a ley line, and when they're in it. You can also do kinesiology trusts when they're outside and when they're inside, and you always you find that they're strengthened. Obviously there's some lines that have trauma on for various events that have happened, like going through because it's not you don't feel comfortable with a good clean ley line. You feel very much stronger, you feel connected to the earth, and you feel good actually, because it's strengthening your lower part of your body, your legs, so you feel very very connected. But if it's jangly and you feel irritated, means that there's something on that line that's happened, and it's distorting the vibration. It's making a distorted frequency pattern. Because these lines, they're like standing waves. So you imagine a frequency wave traveling in a straight line across the landscape. When it's running perfectly, it's a beautiful signal. But when it's distorted, that's when you get problems going through people's houses and things like that.
And is there anything you can do about that?
Yeah. Earth acupuncture. You can work shamanically down lines. People have done that. You just journey down the line to find the blockage. Or, in my case, I work with the nature spirits to do that.
But I have to ask, what is Earth acupuncture? I mean, what do you do? Is that a great big stakes in the ground? What is that?
Yeah, you get a crane. No, it's the same as acupuncture, only you use, there are lots of different ways. You can use metal needles, or obviously they're not rods rather than needles. I tend to use wooden wands, which I cut with permission of a tree, and that has a little elemental in it, which helps release the chi.
Is it better to use wood than metal?
It doesn't really matter, but I find it more effective working with an elemental than just Yeah. A bit of metal.
So and when, because when, of your connections? Sorry.
But when people are doing this stuff with things in their homes and you say they're kind of somehow putting stuff where it needs to be, are there likely to be elementals helping them to do that?
Quite possibly, yeah. It depends how tuned in they are. I mean, obviously you don't know. But children and old people generally tend to work with elementals.
Mm-hmm.
Children particularly, they can bring them in. they can get stuck in a child's aura, and they can go from being, you know, lovely, peaceful child to an absolute tearaway in the matter of a couple of hours, because this elemental is on and having a bit of fun. So sometimes they're having fun, sometimes it's stuck. But is what you've got to imagine is that these elementals, and there's a whole bunch of different types of them, they're very much like children themselves. They're very inquisitive, and they're very friendly. They have no fear as such, so they'll come up and talk to you.
Yeah.
And if the child is aware of them, aware of the energy, they will, you know, go and play with the elemental, and they'll just have a game.
Mm.
And they won't think anything of it, because it is actually quite natural. And all the fairy stories throughout Europe and all kinds of places talk of the fairies taking children into the fairy world. And,
yeah.
And it is, all these stories come from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, there's a nugget of truth in all of them.
Yeah,
so.
And you know, the kind of nature spirit realm is not necessarily a hostile one. It can be, they can become hostile because of man's interference with their, particularly their particular place. So if they had a sacred place and then someone built a housing estate on it, they might get pretty pissed off.
Mm.
And they might cause a lot of accidents to happen. They might try and stop it in the ways that they can. But generally, they're most beneficial and benign beings. And in my line of work, they're kind of lining up to help.
Yeah.
Whenever I've got a job, they want to help. It's not, they're not, and they, because they're, in a way, they look up to people. It's like looking up to your older brother.
Mm-hmm.
Because they admire the fact that we've got consciousness. And unfortunately, most of us just completely ignore them. We have no idea that they're there at all.
Can I interject with just one story about this?
Green
Gathering last year, we had the most astonishing night that we've ever since referred to as Pixie Night, where we sat in the crew quarters and we somehow invited the elementals into our consciousness. And we became the most playful, crazy bunch of children for the whole night. And those that were there have never forgotten it.
In fact, I think you could hear some of that sound on one of the Doctor Rock podcasts. You can hear the Avalon Rising crew.
That wouldn't surprise me. But there was no drugs or alcohol involved, and we all laughed so much that our sides hurt, and we've never laughed so much in our lives.
Yeah.
And John Bide said, "Now you know how much fun the Pixies have in their world."
Yeah.
And he was absolutely bang on. It was just outrageous. And it's an unforgettable experience, because we created the environment for the elementals to be with us. We'd invited them in.
Yeah.
Or they'd invited us in, and it was beautiful.
So is it like one of those things where it's a matter of invitation?
Yeah, they won't intrude unless you ask them, in general. Unless you're doing something to their environment, in which case they might come in and create some problems.
I'm interested by this because one of the, I remember they, 14 Times, which is one of my favourite magazines of the past, occasionally runs stories on fairies and the spirit folk and stuff. And one of the stories that came up was this idea that we all lose things, don't we, apart from just socks and biros.
Yeah.
Every now and then something you really want goes missing.
Yeah.
And you've turned the place upside down.
Yeah.
First of all, I've seen people dowsing for lost keys. of festivals, lost vehicle keys are a real curse in an environment like this.
Yeah.
And the number of, in fact, I don't think I've ever seen them failed to be found. And I've seen people more or less taking a motorhome apart, and there'll be some, normally a woman sitting by the fire or something, and she'll go there.
They are.
And she'll point at the vehicle, and she'll go, tell him they're in the door. And he'll go, no, I remember Jonathan Adams. He's going, no, I've had the door apart, he was going. And she said, well, tell him to have the door apart again. And he did, and there were the keys. Now, the thing is, they might well not have been there when he first looked. But this 14 Times story said, perhaps the thing you're looking for has been pixelated. And perhaps all you need to do is ask for it back. And we found that to be, along with the dowsing, to be tremendously successful.
Mm.
Quite often what happens is the table that you thought you'd left them on, and, you know, there they are. You know, they've just turned up. So perhaps many of us have got this kind of experience and haven't noticed it.
Yeah, it's a pretty classic one.
Can I share another story that happened
to me last? People losing things is a classic. If you lose a lot of things, then you've got elementals, basically.
Right.
Yeah, there's all kinds, brownies, pixies, gnomes, elves. But the thing about elementals is that they're very happy-go-lucky, quite inquisitive. They won't interfere. They generally don't come into the house unless you specifically ask them. I don't necessarily recommend bringing them into the house because it can end up in chaos. And there's a woman I know in Scotland who has invited them in, and she just accepts the chaos because she likes their company. But
so what sort of chaos does she experience as a result of having a house?
Well, anything that, you know, just whenever you want something, it's not there. TV going wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when you're trying to watch some program. I guess. All kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, in general, I would recommend not to invite them in. But they're very approachable, and particularly if you're working outside in the garden or any kind of outdoor activity, particularly with nature, they're great. You just get this little nudge where you feel to do something, and that's 9 times out of 10 that's a nature spirit.
Yeah.
So obviously, different people resonate with different types of nature spirits. Like some people resonate with fairies, some resonate with gnomes, some dwarves, some trolls. But
there's certainly people resonating with trolls.
They're all over the internet.
Well, trolls are, I mean, they've got a bad rap, but they're actually very solitary beings, and they generally live in mountainous areas.
So they don't live under a bridge.
They don't live under a bridge. What their kind of real estate is rock, big rocks. Okay, so you might find them in cairns, near stone circles, cliff faces. It's the rock. They're the kind of work the minerals that work the rocks.
On Dr. Rocks,
On Doctor, yeah, exactly. So you might have troll relatives. But yeah, they're I mean, you can read about them on the, you know, there's loads of articles about them on the.
What about kind of old style literature? What's the best? Because obviously, people don't write so much about things like that nowadays. They were a lot more common in human experience in the past, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, everything I'm talking about is from my own personal experience. I haven't read loads of fairy books. It's all personal experience and that of my fellow geomancers who also recognize their value in, you know, healing the earth, basically. That's why we work with these beings.
I must admit, when we found ourselves a bit adrift, we couldn't find the festival site when we came down the first night, so we came to the place where you're staying.
Yeah.
And we were, both Sinclair and I, were really struck by how gentle and peaceful the place felt. Like a piece of ancient woodland, in fact. As soon as you got out the car, you knew you were in a comfortable place. And it was a lovely 24 hours or so.
That's a lot of dowsing workshops later to get to that place. But yeah, there's been a lot of geomantic work there.
So it wasn't always like that then?
No, I mean, actually, where we are is the Battle of Langport. And the first couple of years I lived there, there was a lot of trauma from that. And, you know, like, just feeling the trauma of the battle and the, yeah, because of the cavaliers and roundheads. And there was a lot of tension, and people have seen, you know, cavaliers walking through the house, and all kinds of children have got scared and run out of the house because of the, you know, seeing ghosts and things. But that's all completely calmed down now. It's very much more tranquil.
Presumably those entities are still there, but happier, are they?
No, they've moved on.
You've moved them?
Yeah, they've moved on. I mean, there was a bit of real magic that happened with someone who lived in the house, and he had a connection to the battle. I don't know, you know, how he figured this out, but he did. And one day he went into the field, and everything was right. There was an eagle, not an eagle, but a buzzard above. The sun was out, and I went and talked to him, and he said something, and that was it. It was just, they could all leave.
That was it.
I'm not going to tell you what it was, but it was something really, just really simple.
Yeah.
Because he had a connection, because he had karmic links, he was able to unlock the trauma, and all the spirits could move on. It was quite amazing.
So that's quite major changes you can be making then.
Yeah, I mean, potentially you can, you know, change the whole landscape. And obviously that in different places I've worked, I've made, you know, a lot of people a lot better, to be able to have normal functioning lives, where before they were either kind of reacting to excessive Wi-Fi and radio frequencies, or underground water. And, you know, underground water can cause all kinds of things, immune problems, cancer. So there's the whole plethora of that. And then you've got other things like the psychic stuff, spirits. And also you've got the electromagnetics of the grids. So there's a whole range of things which geomancers can do to kind of harmonize a space.
So what do you think geomancy is?
Ah.
At its core.
Okay, well, my definition is something along the lines of the study and divination of energy flowing through a landscape with the intention of healing and transforming it.
Yeah.
There is a type of geomancy that involves sticks, which is Chinese geomancy, but it's nothing to do with the geomancy. What we're talking about, the definition, geo-earth-mancy divination. So it's a divination of the earth. But in what I'm referring to as Western geomancy is the actual divination and healing of the earth. So it's a transformation of disturbed energy patterns into harmonic flows. So it's a kind of like the old school feng shui practitioners of China.
Yeah.
That went around and actually worked the dragon lines, actually worked with underground water, with the sha chi, with all the things in the landscape which were causing problems for the people. They would actually work them, and that's the old school. I'm sure it still exists. But and it exists in other countries as well. The Indians have their Vashtu tradition. The Tibetans have their own geomancy. I don't know about some other countries, but there is... Actually, my friend learnt a Native American geomancy, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And he was taught by... I think they were... what tribe were they? Cherokee. I think they were Cherokee, and they had their own way of dealing with disturbed energies in the earth.
Yeah.
And they had their own little geomancy tradition. So it is everywhere, and it's because it's everywhere because it's the earth. It's because of the natural energies of the earth. It's the way the energy moves across the earth. So it's completely natural, and we're kind of discovering it from the ground up by direct experience, which is probably the best way. But if we had a tradition, we'd all be of that tradition.
Yeah.
But because we're Western people living in here, we're kind of picking and finding our way. And because of the use of dowsing, which means that everything is verifiable, everything can be doused energetically and checked out, and you can also get other people to verify your findings. So basically you diagnose what different things mean. So
yeah.
where grid lines vibrate in your body, what they do to people, how they affect people's consciousness. And the same with ley lines, same with underground water,
yeah.
Same with other things as well.
And the thing is, we do know, I mean, at least on that, there's a physical connection there, isn't there? Because as we've talked about before, we know that all of the people who are mining for minerals and oil and water everything, it all tends to kick off with dowsing.
Yeah, all of it. Diamonds, gold.
All the major corporations are using dowsers in the first instance.
And the police, but they'll never admit it.
The police?
Yeah.
Are they out there with dowsing rods?
Well, not specifically the police, but there are people that the police call on to find missing people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is everywhere. And it's kind of... I don't want to say it's remote viewing, because it's not. But it's similar. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we heard...
When you are dowsing, you do go into an altered state.
Yeah, I remember seeing a vid on YouTube of Hamish Miller dowsing a stone circle, and they had they'd wired him up with electrodes and connected him to a computer to see which bits of his brain were working when he was dowsing, and they said exactly that.
Yeah.
They said different parts of his mind were working differently from before he went into the dowsing mode.
Yeah. It's actually a great way to get... more in tune and become more kind of meditative.
Yeah.
It's to do a lot of dowsing, because you generally become more peaceful, and it's easier to meditate after you've done a lot of dowsing.
I guess if you're going into a state of mind for actually doing the dowsing, then that's it's one of these things where I say that if you can, instead of constantly building on the frenzy, if you occasionally get the chance to calm yourself down, it makes a lot of difference to the kind of state you get yourself into.
Yeah.
And dowsing requires not only a special form of concentration, which does definitely quiet you down, but it also gives you kind of feedback.
Absolutely.
Which kind of rewards the experience, and then your mind knows how to do it, and it finds it easier to access that state.
Yeah. It becomes easier, and often people get disillusioned by... because they get a lot of false positives when they're starting out. What I would say is, don't try and douse whether you go down the shops or not. What you want to douse for is something that is known. So don't douse for future, douse for something that is known. Past is generally a lot easier than future.
Mm-hmm.
Future dowsing is very dodgy at the best of times. But if you know... I mean, you can get your friend to bury something, bury a 2p piece or something, and go around the garden and try and find it.
Yeah.
But the actual easiest dowsing is with dowsing each other, dowsing your etheric energy field.
Yeah.
Because then you get immediate feedback, and you kind of know when they're, because of your own inner kind of perception of energy, you know when someone's entering your energy field. And so it becomes easier to do that. Once you get that, then dowsing ley lines is a lot easier, and then dowsing underground water is easier, and then dowsing other things becomes easier.
Yeah.
It is practice. You have to do a lot of practice, and it helps to have someone up to practice with.
You are kind of what you're doing is sensitizing the tool that you've got, aren't you?
Yeah, because we can all feel all this stuff. It's just that we're making what is intangible provide a physical reaction through the dowsing lights.
Yeah. But it's when you're doing when you're introducing people to their own energy fields, you don't use dowsing rods, do you? You just get them to walk towards each other
with the hands,
with the hands out and their eyes closed.
Yeah. The dowsing rods are great because it gives you a real kind of feedback. It's also good for dowsing fields, or things like lines, because when you meet the line, the rods will kind of move to point in the direction of the line. So that's very helpful. And it also gives you a kind of one step removed from actually putting your hands in the energy. So I would say start with dowsing rods, because sometimes you meet an energy that is really not good.
Mm-hmm.
And I come across that a lot because I'm, you know, I'm asked to come in and deal with things like that. And sometimes what often happens with a very disturbed, say, water vein, for example, you can get all kinds of, let's just say, entities on it, and these things can influence your mind. They can actually cause psychosis if exposed over a long time. It can actually distort your mental patterns, because you imagine all that disturbed, and we know how water holds memory.
Yeah.
So if you have imagine something really heinous happened on a water vein, and then you douse it, and you pick up that energy, and then that gets translated into your consciousness, and then you end up, feeling those feelings, or sensing the trauma of what happened, and then that's when a lot of dowsers give up. Because they do a lot of dowsing, they douse for years and years, and then they'll meet an energy one day, and it'll just wipe them out, and they'll be on their back for a week because of it. And they might get ill, they might, have a panic attack. But this is what, I teach people to, not only when you meet these energies, but what to do with it, how to deal with it, how to transform it, how to,
And presumably there's methods of discovering it without it automatically transferring itself to your energetic system.
And it's basically practice. The more sensitive you become, when you're walking towards it, you go, oh my God, I don't want to walk down there. And then you give yourself the time, and then you can go into it from a distance to see what is actually going on.
Yeah.
And it's a step removed rather than immersing yourself in it and then freaking out.
Yeah.
You just stop yourself before the car crash.
And you will presumably, if you're paying attention, get that kind of internal warning.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Doesn't come at you out of the blue. There'll be some pre-shocks, as it were.
Well, not always, but...
Yeah.
it's all fun and games. But, It's unlikely, unless you were intently dowsing, you probably, if you were just normally walking across that field, you wouldn't notice.
Right. So in a sense, you're opening up the channel by dowsing.
Yes, because your intention is connecting you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing about the dowsing, isn't it? Is to have a clear intent as to what it is you're dowsing
exactly,
for.
Exactly, yeah. It's no good just dowsing. You have to, am I dowsing for ley lines? Am I dowsing for water vines? Am I dowsing for grid lines?
Mm. I know Steve Jaros recommended, when he started in his garden, and he kicked off by dowsing a bucket of water.
Yeah.
And then he had to go out dowsing the drains because he knew where they ran.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent he had, and that, it seems to have enabled him fairly quickly to tune into his own internal responses.
Yeah.
Looking for things that he knew were there.
Yeah,
I like the idea of having something hidden out there that you go looking for.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, see, isn't it? Because it's one of the things we're really hugely disencouraged from believing is in these things.
Intangible things.
And really, by trying these things and by experimenting with it, you can very quickly, as I've retold before my early dowsing experiences, you can very quickly show to yourself why it is the mining companies are using dowsers to find stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you do concentrate, and you, especially if you have a bit of help, you can very quickly find that the dowsing rods are undoubtedly not only showing you where something is, but if you think about it, they'll show you which direction it's travelling in. And
how deep it is.
Yeah, and all that.
In the case of water, how many gallons per minute?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the most important thing in terms of sensitizing yourself to things and assuring yourself of their reality is just that kind of experience.
Yeah.
So what you got lined up for us for the rest of the weekend, if you remember? Have we got any more Sean workshops coming up?
Yeah, I'm doing Nature Spirit one on Saturday and an Angel one on Sunday.
Brilliant. I should definitely come and have another go at the Nature Spirit one. I got distracted last time.
Well, you're very gnomish.
I really enjoyed it last time. As the last one I did, we were looking for gnomes at the Green Gathering, and people had a lot of fun.
Mm.
They did.
Because they like to hide.
Yeah, but they like to be noticed as well.
Yeah.
That's really good. Well, remind us what your website is, so people can go and have a look at it if they want.
It's georepairman.co.uk.
Georepairman.co.uk.
And there's a few things which I've done and built on there over the years, a few stone circles.
Yeah. Why do you build stone circles?
Because, initially because I wanted to find out how they worked. And now it's because I want to put them back. I want to put back the ones we've lost.
Yeah.
And there is something that the Native Americans call brightening the land. And that's when humans work with nature to achieve something. It creates a dynamic which is 10 times greater than you could possibly do just on your own. That's when basically heaven and earth and you are in harmony with an intent to create a sacred space. And that sacred space is for all beings, for healing, for transformation. And we use sacred geometry, we use alignments to other places, other sites of significance, and just basically add another one in to the grid, add another sacred site, which has its own unique function. And we don't really think about what the function is, but we have an intention for it to work in a particular way for the benefit of all beings. Mm. And that's in so we end up creating a kind of portal for light to come in, earth energies to come out, and if we're lucky we get a really powerful energy center which is generating its own etheric charge and pulsing it out down the ley lines.
Mm.
And that when you've done it really well and everything is in alignment, that's a wow. That's really special.
Yeah.
The last circle we made last year for 2012 is a special circle, really special. And that's on my website. You can have a look at that. It's a very unique circle. There's only one other made like it, and it was made in Wales. And interestingly, it was the site of the Welsh Roswell.
Oh, have we got a Roswell in Wales, have we?
Yeah, apparently a UFO landed and people saw it, and it was pretty much it was next to this stone circle. And the stone circle is a pentagonal stone circle.
Yeah.
It's very unusual.
Most
stone circles are actually egg or flattened circles.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few round ones, but this is the only pentagonal one I've ever seen. And when we made it at this festival in Somerset, the energy just took off.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to go there on December 21st at dawn, and my God, it was powerful.
Yeah. So the energy. That's another thing I think that's important is these quarter days, some of the central days in our kind of cosmic cycle around the sun and stuff, really boost the energies of these circles and other sites.
Yeah. Obviously, equinox and solstices are the primary ones, but Beltane, Samhain, Lammas, they're all quite significant as well. But what you find is that the moon has a large influence. So full moon and new moon is a very strong influence in sacred sites.
And cumulatively so, if you get a full moon on the special days.
Yeah, exactly. So full moon on Beltane is amazing.
And also,
what are we lending ourselves for this weekend? We've got a full moon.
Full moon and equinox. Yeah, full moon, very equinox. Powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we've got people coming together with love in their hearts to cooperate and to kind of try and start building this new world that we're after.
Yay. Yeah. Because now
so
it's
what can we
so
do this weekend that heals?
Well, the equinox is about balance, isn't it? It's about the balance of male, female. It's about balance in nature. It's the balance of the year. And so the full moon is empowering that balance. So it's like increasing the balance. So the balance becomes even more balance than it was before. Yeah. So it's a great time for reflection. It's a great time for community. It's a great time for equality in all things. Yeah.
And of course, Litmus was on the show a few weeks back proposing a new calendar which gave us five special days of the year, the start of the year, and the two equinoxes and the two solstices. And in his new calendar, they'd be a day for pause for all of us,
yeah,
so that we can pour our energy into whatever it is that the Earth's trying to do at that time.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
And how do we combat those people that are out there doing the burning of care and satanic rituals and dark things?
Well, they're going to be balanced as well. So.
Are they?
You can't. You can't get away from the balance. The whole. Yeah, the balance is there. It's coming through. Yeah, there are people who misuse the days and try and get power and God knows what they do, but I don't really care, to be honest. But the natural cycle and the way nature works is always, you know, coming back to balance.
Yeah.
So whatever people are doing, whatever they're trying to do, you just look at the earth and how the earth responds to that kind of thing, because how the animals respond, what the animals do at the different times of the year, and then you get a sense of how to behave.
I think that's another important point, because one of the things we've heard a lot on the show from lots of different sources is that one of the reasons why we're experiencing all of the psychosis and chaos that we are experiencing is because we have become completely divorced from nature.
That's right.
To the point where many of us now never see fire. We don't even see a candle. Many of us never get bare feet on the earth.
Mm.
Clean air and clean water are hard to find.
Mm.
And if it is a divorce from nature, which is a major cause of all of this, then by turning our minds to the earth at these important times when it needs minds turning towards it, then we're going to be making the biggest difference that we can.
Well, it's also a time for you to reconnect with it, because it's these pivotal points when the energy shifts, and if you're not plugged in to the earth at that point, then you're kind of left floundering.
You can't receive the charge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you need to receive the changings in energy, and that's why the Celts and the Native Americans mark these points, because that's when the energy changes for the year in subtle ways. So there's four main ones and the four cross quarter days. They're all points on the pendulum of the year.
Yeah.
And the pendulum is the top swing is the winter solstice, the bottom swing is the summer solstice, and the bottom is the equinox. And it does that twice a year. And the time it takes to be in the solstice or in the equinox is the same as a pendulum. So if you imagine you've got a pendulum swinging, when it slows down at its apex, it's at the solstice. And then it comes back and at the fastest point at the bottom, that's the equinox. So now the equinox is 3 days, then that equinox. Solstice is 5 days.
Yeah.
Maybe seven, because the sun is in that space for five days.
Yeah.
The equinox is zoom past.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
I enjoyed that. I'm going to play a couple of tunes and then we'll get the other Sean, get Sean the poet on again, and John Witterick will be joining us as well. So we'll have 5 or 6 minutes of tunes. We're playing a fair bit of punk rock tonight, because we have, of course, got the punk poet with us. So give us another 5 or 6 minutes, couple of tunes, maybe three, and we'll be back with you.
Thanks everybody out there for listening. This is of course Dr. Rock's radio show coming to you from the Avalon Horizon Arena at the Unity
This is Media Streaming International Radio.
You're listening to Dr. Rock's radio show here on MSIRadio.com and ScotlandIsFree.ning.com, coming to you live from a dampish field just outside Glastonbury. I know that before we move on to John Witterick, I know that Noel would like to just say a few words about his recent experience with dowsing, because he's fairly new to it and quite enjoyed listening to Sean, didn't you?
I certainly did. So many of the things that Sean talked about resonate for me. I've learned a huge amount from Sean. His workshop, first with Earth Spirits, Nature Spirits, was a real shocker for me, because I was introduced to the Water Diva that manifests inside the pipe that I built, and that was really powerful. That was the most shockingly powerful thing that filled the whole space from the ceiling of the tent to just above the floor, and it was brightly glowing, and wow. And That was just the warm-up act, though, because then the workshop with angels, I was introduced to Archangel Michael, which was so powerful, I just stayed on the floor.
And you're actually getting lessons that you're managing to experiment with and demonstrate. Yep. And you're also getting some... You're being led gently, aren't you, by the fingers? You're not being thrown into anything you can't deal with.
It's like I'm at school. Like, I've signed up for this amazing etheric course, and I have no idea where it goes, and every lesson is a bit different from the other lessons, and it's always unique. So the healing experience, whether it's distant healing or no direct healing, the dowsing experience, what I'm being shown to build, it's always just that little bit different, and it's just fabulous to be allowed to play in this realm.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you very much. Because I think it is important, amongst all these other things that we're learning, that we do realise that these things are real, that they are there to help us, and that by putting a bit of attention to them, we might be saving ourselves a lot of grief and helping ourselves out a lot. But most importantly of all, of course, just like we're experiencing psychosis and chaos, so is the Earth. And one of the reasons she's experiencing that is because of our lack of attentiveness. So I think it's really great to have people like Sean doing the work he's doing, and you, Noel. I really look forward to seeing it. I've seen some of your stuff now. I look forward to seeing it on the ground. And I look forward as well, as I will never tire of saying, to seeing Steve Duros's work with stones, because he's working at the place where Sean is hanging out as well. Yeah. So I think we'll be hearing more about this kind of stuff on the show. We've got, according to my little battery monitor, it's gone orange. It tells us we've got somewhere under 40 minutes left. Hopefully next weekend I will be picking up a 12-volt charging kit with solar panel and all of that, which might well mean that in future we'll be able to do a full show from the field in a dark tent, which will be really great. But in the meantime, we've been rejoined by Sean. Hi, Sean.
Hi, how you doing?
And John Witterick's with us as well.
How you doing, Dr. Rock?
I'm doing well, thank you, John. That's fantastic. A pleasure sharing a field with you again.
Not the first time.
No, it's not. It's probably the first time we've had a bit of a look at your site, though, at Get Out of Debt Free, and how it started and where it's got to, what you're doing now, because it's become a central thing for you, hasn't it?
It has, but... Just to keep the theme of energy work, what I must say is that every step of the way with the development of the site, I was led all the way. So it wasn't, I don't feel it was something I did. It was something initially, you know, like a lot of people, I ended up in a lot of debt because of this fake money that we have that's created out of nothing, with interest thrown in for free that we have to pay back. But I was actually looking for an energetic, if you like, call it spiritual, if you like, way of dealing with it. And I knew there must be something out there, because I'd gone through a huge shift in myself. And so I had to sort of think about, right, where do I find it? And I just kept looking, sort of, and this word spiritual economics kept coming up. And so I did a Google search, spiritual economics, and found Mary Elizabeth Croft's book,
Yeah. Which is how I clobbered every cash confiscatory bureau known to man, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Brackets, a spiritual economics guide. And I thought, all right, this is it, this is it. And I sort of rolled my sleeves up. And it's only a short e-book, but there's a hell of a lot in there. And there's a lot in there at a lot of different levels. So she's talking about a lot of stuff. And I thought...
The more you learn, the more you get out of that particular book.
Totally, totally. I think she's a remarkable, remarkable lady. And what was wonderful is that she contacted me 2 weeks ago and actually said, thank you for sending lots of people towards her book. But I will explain how the two ends meet in a second. But what it was, I thought, right, there's going to be template letters out there. Because she explained in very simple language, but in a complex sort of background explaining it, actually how you can actually challenge the, you know, you can say work to the bank, well, where do you get the money from? Or you can say to a debt collector, have I got a contract with you? And quite simple sort of things.
One question at a time.
One question at a time, yeah. And I thought, well, this is great. There's got to be template letters out there. So I Googled Mary Elizabeth Croft template letters. Of course, there was nothing. Not sausage. So. And I thought, I can't believe it. I can't believe no one's read this book, put the letters together and put them on the website, you know, so, and shared them. And Mary herself said, well, no, they're always changing. And so, you know, I don't really want to do that. I thought, let people do them themselves, which is good because it empowers people.
Yeah.
So long and short of it was I read her book again, and the third time I read it, I made notes. And it took a while. I was probably, you know, 3 or 4 days just going through the book, spending a lot of time on it. And I gradually put together these letters and sent them off to the debt collectors that I was dealing with. And I couldn't believe how quickly they either caved in or passed it on to somebody else. And of course, the whole thing, as I was doing this, this was really empowering. So...
Presumably you had got into quite a hole.
Well, I had a very successful business, and a little voice in my head said, sell it as quickly as you can. And so I sold it as quickly as I can, didn't put a contract in place or anything, and didn't get paid. And ended up trusting that inner voice. Yeah, I was learning. But it was actually perfect, because my life has been about building things up and letting them go, building things up and letting them go.
Same here.
And so it's been wonderful, and now I realise how blessed I was. Every single catastrophe that happened to me, I can now look back and say, thank goodness that happened.
Do you know, that's something that struck me again and again, and I never tire of saying that the biggest apparent betrayals in my life have within months... Yes. Turned out to be really heavily disguised gifts.
Totally, totally, totally. Might take a little while. Now, when things drop away and disappear, I go, right, I'm ready for the next thing. We've obviously got a bit of space clearing going on.
Yeah.
Ready again, to move.
Because you've had the experience of realising that an ugly experience is only ugly because you're imagining what's going to come from it.
Yes.
Not because of the experience itself.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sure, Sean, you've probably got situations in your life where... things have fallen apart and you thought, wow, someone's going to come in here.
Absolutely. And it's always, I mean, I've got a line in a poem somewhere in the book that says, you know, we sort of create every day what we see, and then we can cope with everything that's thrown on our plate. Do you know? And we've got to realize that these are tests. Totally. Our arm tests. They turn out to be gifts.
Yeah. Yes.
Truly, truly, it has been written, he who is not willing to let go is going to need very long arms.
Or elastic ones, at least.
Yeah. And if nothing else, you know, we need to see these massive changes, and you're not going to see any change at all without letting go of a substantial amount of stuff.
Totally, totally. Mm. And for me, this year has been a complete transformation of myself. I've seen so many... I've been at so many events now, and one of them was quite remarkable, and Noel over there, who's looks like he's going to sleep. He's actually listening. He's actually listening intently. It started off, this year started off for me with the Bilderberg Festival, where we just did a lot of energy work and sent it towards the Bilderbergers in the hotel, just outside Watford. And that was quite remarkable, because we were doing powerful. They've been to all these wonderful places in the world, and they come back to Watford.
They filled the gap.
Things are coming home to roost.
Well, I feel in this year it had to come back to England, in the same way as the Olympics had to come back to this country. I feel this country. And when I say this country, I mean this greater. I feel that Ireland was included. When we go back far enough, it was all one.
Think we were far more special in Ireland.
I agree. I think you're far more special in Ireland too.
But we obviously taught you a few things. taught us a lot.
Paddy had a bike, and we went global.
So you got these form letters up there.
Yeah.
And you started attracting people, I would imagine.
Well, what it is, I sort of did the template letters and solved my debt problem. And then, you know how it is when you get little quiet voices in your head telling you to do something, and you keep thinking, I've really got to do that sometime. And I think about a year passed by between writing the letters and the free man thing hadn't really even kicked off by then.
So how long ago was this?
Oh, God, I was trying to work out the other day. I think it was 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's 2008. I actually just decided, right, what I'm going to do is just get a really basic website. I'm going to get a really simple template. I'm going to change a couple of banners on it, put a little few words in it, and stick the letters up and just allow people to download the letters. And that's basically what I did. And then I got a mate of mine who could write code. I was saying, well, it'd be really good if we could, like, have America and Canada and New Zealand and Australia and Ireland, because they're all very, very similar laws. It's just they're all called something slightly differently. And he actually set it up so that wherever you were within these seven countries, because we added South Africa as well, that you'd be able to download the letters with the correct statutes in. So that, of course, statutes don't apply to us, as I'm sure your listeners already know, but they do apply to corporations and persons. So it was quite wonderful that...
We've gone offline.
Oh, no, have we?
Yeah, hold on.
Oh, dear.
I need to find...
Can I have a torch? Anyone got a torch?
Yes, I've got a torch here.
Oh, crap. Damn. Yeah.
What happened?
Bugger, it's the...
Was it just recently?
Yeah, just recently, it's just told me.